Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR, W2TTT. Okay, that's the right answer to that question. Good evening, everyone. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is an open net. It's open to all radio amateurs who are licensed to operate in the 2-meter band. And it's a little different than any other net you'll probably encounter in the area, because we want you to check in even if you don't think you have a question or a comment or a for sale or swap item. You can have any combination of those things, but nothing at all. We're here to discuss amateur radio, electronics, computing, electricity, telecommunications, things that support those things, the natural phenomena, the underlying science, the fun, the service that we provide, just the questions we've had. We can talk about old war stories of how we operated, what we did. We can talk about our aspirational interests, things we'd like to try, but not sure how to even start. There are no dumb questions. There are no stupid answers. Well, except for maybe occasionally some of mine. Depends on how tired I am. But I'm perking up here. I took a little bit of a nap this evening after a very long day at work. A great day at work, by the way. It was a glorious day. A little warm, but glorious nonetheless. So, without any further ado, let me also emphasize we need you to check in even if you don't have a question or a comment or a for sale or swap item, because we need to know who's out there. We need to be able to address the audience. Can't address the audience if we don't know who the audience is. So, let's do this in some orderly manner. And what we will do, we'll just turn down the other audio. Let's start by checking in with our call signs, our name. Indicate whether you have a question, a comment, a for sale or swap item, any combination of those things, or none of the above. Let's do this by calling the alpha call signs first. Any station whose call sign begins with the letter A, please go first. K2BAR.
Alpha Charlie 2 Golf India. Rich, one question.
Okay, very good, Rich. Rich, I may ask, if you don't mind, just if you would mind scratching down anybody who's got questions or comments. I'm going to do this from memory. I'm pretty good at it, but I don't want to mess up. But I know you have a question, so very good. Welcome aboard. Any other Alpha stations?
Gordon, I'm on a portable right now on an HP. I really don't have a way of logging anything for you.
Not a worry. I've got a brain. I'll work on it. Not a problem. I should be able to handle it. Any other Alpha stations? Okay, let's go to the Whiskey stations. Any station with a Whiskey?
Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy, one question.
No questions this week.
Oh boy, there were at least two, maybe three. Randy, you go first. I missed everything there.
Sorry, Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy, with a question. Over.
Hey, welcome back, Randy. Nice seeing you last Saturday. That was a pleasant surprise. It was like you had just never left my life. All of a sudden, you're standing there in front of me, and I'm going, geez, last time I saw Randy, I was in his driveway in Washington Township 20 years ago. It was like amazing. All right, very good. All right, welcome aboard. Who is the other station?
WA2UMP, Jim in Pearl River, New York. No questions at the moment.
Good evening, Jim. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey 2, Juliet, Echo, Kilo with a comment.
Dom, I got your comment. Very good. No problem. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
W2LCN, the name's Rick with a question.
Okie dokie. So far we have one comment and three questions. I even know who they're from. All right, very good. Welcome aboard, Rick. we expect a baby and mother and sibling report. Yeah, if you want to throw it in, we'll even figure out how Dad's doing. But we'll wait till that, until we get around to that, if you don't mind. Any other whiskeys? Yeah, by the way, it's a very technical thing to figure out how you're going to get ham radio time when you have a newborn in the house and other siblings. Anyway, and everything else that's in life. All right, let's go to the Kilo 2s.
K2VAR. This is K2ZO. Just the one comment. Back to that.
Good evening, Jim. You got your comment, Mr. ZO. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2EIR. None of the above, and I'm keeping a list for a while of questions and comments.
But you are the man. Okay, very good. Thank you, Howie. All right. Any other Kilo 2s? All right, rest of the kilos, any and all. Wow, we could dowie, no kilos other than the Kilo 2s. Okay, that's interesting. Novembers.
I think I had to log in.
KD2DDK, okay, I got you, Gary. What's your pleasure?
Just standing by, nothing of importance.
I'm 60 seconds out from your location, by the way. Alrighty. Any other kilos?
Actually, you called November, and this is N2OEL. One question.
I know, but I was going retrograde because I had a slow on the trigger guy. All right, very good. Noel, welcome aboard. Good to hear your dulcet tones. Any other Novembers?
Do you, Stuart, comment?
Okay, N1STU, comment. Good evening, Stuart. Or by T, any other Novembers?
November Zulu 2 Kilo, trying again. Good evening, Gordon. No comments, no questions, just monitoring. Again, November Zulu 2 Kilo, trying to check in.
You got it, NZ2K, K2VAR, gotcha. Any other stations? Any call signs? That station who tried there, you want to try it again? You're a little noisy.
KD2DVB. Joe, no questions.
November Papa Radio, Hector, no questions, no comments as of yet.
Okay, I got both of you. Very good. Wow, Hector, it's been a long time since we heard you in here. Anybody else? All right, let's get this. W2JEK, over to you with your comments, sir. K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR in the net. W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Just announcing that the next Barra VE test session will be on Friday, June the 14th, at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. That's back to net. W2JK.
Okay, very good, Don. Anybody have any comments or questions for Don about the upcoming test session or licensing in general?
JK.
Don, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'll just let everybody know that the school will be closed for July and August, so we won't have another test session until a date in September. I don't know just what that date will be at this time. It will be announced in the future. Back to that, W2JK.
Okay, so we're going to do that old summertime song, See You in September.
Yeah, but I sing it in Morse code.
Sing it in Morse code? Who did that one? Frankie Valli?
I think it may have been Paul Anker, K2EIR.
I'll defer to those more senior and for whom they were experiencing their teenage years when these songs came out. I was a little rugrat probably sticking up my bed at that point.
It was the fourth season. This is WA2UMP.
Fourth season. Okay. I was close. All right, very good. See, we do keep it light here. So no one has any comments for Don? All right, very good. Very good. All right, do we have, someone else had a comment? Who was it had a comment for the net? N1STU, were you the one with the comment, or did you have a question? Okay, Howdy, who was the other comment for the net? I'm drawing a blank.
Ditto.
Yes, on frequency. That's just the way it is. All right, no problem. Well, let's get to the questions at hand. AC2GI, Rich, your question, K2BAR.
I got my very first grandson. Fine software for it, as examples or whatever, since I've never programmed one before. And which editor do you want me to use? Python, is that correct?
Rich, I only got the back end of that and only part of it. So you're asking about an editor, something about software ports and Python. That's all I got. Rich, we're going to come back to you in a little bit. We'll come back to you in a little bit. We'll get you the opportunity to get to a better location. In the meantime, let's move over to Randy, Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, K2BAR. What's your pleasure, Mr. Randy?
Thanks, Gordon. My question, I guess, is related to the forthcoming start of hurricane season this weekend, and I was considering putting in an emergency power supply, a set of deep cycle batteries, and obviously a decent charger for that. I was thinking of getting a pair of 6-volt T105s. They're Trojan batteries and supposed to be rated very highly. But I wondered if people on the net had other recommendations for a suitable high-capacity deep cycle battery system for an emergency supply. Back to net.
Yeah, I mean, 6-volt T105s, you know, the Trojans are really, really nice batteries. Put a couple of those in the series, charge them up, you're going to be in Rockin' City. Am I not talking?
Yeah, we hear you.
Hey, hello. Am I making it now? W2TTT.
Now, this is WU2S. We hear you loud and clear, Gordon. Back the net.
Now, Gary's sitting alongside me, and I'm desensing him. He thought I wasn't getting in the repeater. Okay, very good. But, yeah, those are really good. The other ones that are, you know, probably a little more economical with something lower capacity are the, what are those? They come back in, they come in red, blue, and yellow top batteries. They're cylindrical cells. They're very good as well. Just bring a blank on the name, but the blue top ones are the ones you want, and amazingly enough, AutoZone is a stocking supplier, and there's an AutoZone in Hackensack, there's an AutoZone in Bergenfield now, if you can believe it, and those are good locations, ideas as well. Randy, the biggest thing is, how are you going to manage the cutover? Are you just going to manually go to it and just tack into it when you need to use the battery support, or are you looking to have like a power supply and a battery in a seamless transition, in which case I would advise that you get like a power gate or something like that from West Mountain Radio, or there's a newer product from the guy who invented the power gate for West Mountain Radio that KGI is handling. It's pricey, but it's really, really good. It'll handle up to 80 amperes, so it's scalable to a large format supply requirement. Over.
Optima is the battery you're thinking of.
Thank you, Optima. I have a mental block on. I have one in my shack, and I have a mental block on this thing. I'm embarrassed, but that's a good start. Randy, let's get your comments, and then we'll throw it around for others.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Gordon. Yeah, Optima, that I researched that, and those looked like they might work as well. I didn't know about the power gate. No, my plan at this stage is just to do, to have the capacity here and to do a manual cutover and leave the automation for some time in the future. So I am, so if I went with a Trojan or an Optima battery, I also have a follow-up question on what would people recommend in the way of a charger? Is there anything to look for in particular that would be suitable, or is just a sort of a standard cheapo charger, is that going to be good enough? Back to net.
Honestly, I like to use the power gate because you can set the charging rate, and they also are smart enough to figure out that once the voltage gets to a certain level to cut down the current load. The power gates aren't cheap either, but they are very effective in doing that, and you can use a conventional 12-volt battery, so that way you have seamless transition between battery and power supply, AC power supply.
Okay, thanks. Does anybody else have any ideas? Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra.
82EIR.
Howie, go for it.
Okay, I have a few comments. Number one, I would check the QST literature, the archives. I seem to remember something about some warning about the configuration series versus parallel, series parallel, whatever, but I don't remember what it is, so I would go back and take a look at that. So that's number one. Number two, I've been happy with battery tender as a charger, but the one I have is only about an amp or so, and it does give you some feedback with its lights, and it does go to a trickle charge, and I'm sure they have other models. Once again, battery tender, I think PowerWorks that advertises usually on the rear inside cover of QST carries that line. Other places do too, certainly on the internet. Item three, if you're going to run anything off batteries, I highly recommend a boost supply. This is a supply that will take the voltage from, say, 14 volts down to 9 volts even, and boost it to a constant voltage, say, 13.8, and it will give you the best cycling use of your batteries. And keep the rig working the way it's supposed to work. And MFJ makes some, and the original one, I'm forgetting their name, but I bought theirs, and they have models at various amper rates, but it's a boost power supply, and I think also if you, let me let this reset, if you do a search for boost supply, you'll find something. I think I had one more aspect, if you hadn't considered it, is the gauge of your wiring. One of the reasons you want the boost supply is at 12 volts you get a lot of voltage drop, so you want to have a good stock of heavier gauge wire, and you want to think out how you're going to do the wiring to keep that voltage drop from wasting your power and keeping your performance up. So those are my comments. K2EIR.
Pretty good, Howie. Anybody else?
2JEK.
Go right ahead, Don.
Thinking how much is this going to cost, what he's going to run with it. He's got to get up there in the bucks. Maybe he should think about a generator, and now he's got 115 volts AC, so he's... like an EU2000, I think you, if you're in the ARRL and get QSD, you can get them for $900. So maybe, you know, think about what that all going to cost. And if a generator would be more to your liking, you might be able to use other things that do not rely on 12 volts. You know, just how what the prospects are for what Randy wants to do with this, as far as just 12 volts he needs for radio or something, or he wants to light up the house too, and it's up in a refrigerator or the heat like I do. It's that's another thought too. Something to consider anyway. How far are you getting into money pit before you go the other way and get a generator? Back to that, W2JK.
Okay, very good. That was informative. Anybody else?
K2EIR with one additional comment.
Hi, Allie.
If you do go the battery route, I also recommend you look around for solar panels. They have been coming down in price, and you can get some that are okay. When I've done field day, and I don't say I have a lot of experience, but when I've done field day the last year or so with panels, I found that on the duty cycle that we had, I could run the same output power as the amount of power I had from the solar cells, solar panels. So I had three 15-watt panels, that's 45 watts. I ran 45 watts output, and I could run all day because the duty cycle was such that essentially the batteries were never getting discharged. They were actually gaining in voltage. It's just something to think about because some emergencies go on, and in some emergencies you can't get fuel. So, you know, gasoline, you know, no power, the gas pumps don't work. So sooner or later you run out. Just in that perspective that I have, K2EIR.
Yeah, it's a very good perspective. And I run solar at home, but my solar capacity is very minimal and needs to be, shall we say, nurtured carefully and thoughtfully. Otherwise, I won't have any. It's only 50 watts. So I have to think that through. I mean, basically, I can run a laptop for a couple hours and an HT virtually continuously, but that's about it. And some LED lighting. I don't have a large capacity for solar as an alternative. One thing I will say, plus or minus the availability of power or fuel for your vehicle. Your vehicle makes an excellent, source of electricity. I've heard cases where people's homes have been deprived of heat, and people have found neat and interesting ways through an inverter to get at least the edge off the house or keep the plumbing from freezing. Or to run the electrical part of the household, shall we say, forced air system, and we're able to run natural gas to keep heating going in the winter. And that might be another thought, is to, you know, run generators from natural gas, assuming there's a source of natural gas, and that's not disrupted. The other thing people do in extreme places, extreme environments, when they run out of household heating, is they will turn their car into a warming station. You have to be careful you don't asphyxiate yourself. But when you do that, you can also use that opportunity to charge up batteries and other things for other times. So, anybody else?
Okay,
Paul, go right ahead. Good evening.
Yeah, just one thing on that is I've got some nice specs to actually turn the Prius into a sort of battery backup for your whole house, which if anyone's interested, I can pass along. But just one quick question on the alternate battery. Yellow versus blue. Now, I know blue is marine and a slightly bigger reserve, but why would you pick that over really yellow outside of cost?
They can stand to handle the deeper discharges.
Okay, but the yellow handle the deep discharge as well?
I've heard that they don't handle them as well, but they handle them.
Okay.
The translation is, spend the money on the blue. That's what all studies have indicated that I've participated in anyway, and I was not actually the deciding factor on that, but when I looked at the data, that's what we said to go to it. So, okay. That's why
I'm the proud owner of the largest one that Optima sells.
Okay, I run yellow in my cars. Never had a problem. You know, like outside of, you know, just running radios off them, I don't think it's going to do that big a draw. So the question then comes, you know, if you don't have a tender on it, you know, advantage of yellow or blue. You know,
yeah, if you don't have a tender on it, then blue is going to be more, should we say, forgiving of deep discharge cycles. And that's the point. Alrighty, anybody else? Okay, Randy, over to you for your thoughts.
Thank you, Gordon, and thanks to everyone on the net for the advice and the new information. I really appreciate it. It's helpful. I have a few more things to research. To Don's earlier comment, I was really just looking to run radios off the emergency supply. So that would be at least my short-term goal. So again, thanks to everyone on the net, and I'll let you know what I decide to build at some point in the future. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra back to net.
Okey-doke, Randy. It's good hearing you on the air. Don't be a stranger. Obviously, a lot of guys hang around on 79, but a lot of us hang around here and on 442. I'm going to make a little plug here. During the week and at any time you have the you're happening around, if you have a question during the week and you just want to bounce it off of folks who are on the net or folks who are, don't make the net because, you know, frankly, they have either conflicts on Tuesday night or Thursday nights or because they're in bed, sleep, in some cases. Look here during the week and also on 442. TL is 156.7. But 442 over in Wayne, amazingly enough, you hit it all over Bergen County, among other places. It's another good place to find advice during the, you know, between technets. And often to, you know, mature questions and bring up topics during that period. Alrighty. Thank you, Randy. Mr. Howie, who is our next commenter? Let's get the commenters done, and then we'll go to more questions.
K2EIR. I don't think N1FDU came back to you, or SDU, but he did register a comment.
Okay, Stuart, how about you? N1FDU, K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is N1FDU. Yeah, I wanted to say Ron and I went spent about an hour and a half here at the hotel. Where he is, I tell you, he was walking very good. He was very cheerful and jovial, and he seemed to be having a good time. Another thing, I was down in the Carolinas for about 2 weeks, and for some reason, I couldn't get onto your EchoLinkNet. I don't know if it's off or what, but I didn't find it there. Another thing, since the fellows had their radios dropped, I pulled everything out, my VHF radio and my CB, which I don't use, so I'm going to put that on the market. If anybody has any friends that wanted that with the antenna, you give me a buzz. The only other thing, as I mentioned, I couldn't get onto EchoLink. I don't know, is it on or is it off? Back to net.
Okay, in reverse order, it's EchoLink is not on, and we're still working on getting that squared away. And I'm glad that you and Ron had a good visit. That's excellent. Excellent, excellent. Anybody want to comment to Stuart about these items? Okay, Stuart, you want to have any follow-up?
Everyone have a very good weekend, and I'll be at breakfast tomorrow.
Okay, very good. I might actually go to breakfast tomorrow. We'll see how the day goes. And see what my conference call list looks like in the morning. All righty. Very good. Thank you, Stuart.
Howie, do we have any more commenters?
Yes, I think. I don't think he went yet. K2ZO was another commenter. In fact, he was before Stewart.
Okay, good. We'll get a hold of Mr. Zeto, and then we're going to go to Noel's question because he may be getting tired. So, Jim, over to you first, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. How you doing, Emil? And say hello to Randy there, W2S. Haven't heard you in a long time. Just wanted to comment. I made some reference to it last week. In order to, reasonably run the 10-meter net, I have been using the stepper antenna and setting it up as a with two directors. You can do that, which gives me a figure-eight pattern. However, the antenna is very, very sharp, even in that situation. And off the side, it was just too much of a null. I could not hear people. So finally what I did was I was fooling around with a dipole, a 40-meter dipole, off-center fed on 10, which worked quite well. And then finally decided to try something else. So what I've done is I put up a one-wavelength loop. I'm sorry. Two-wavelength. A two-wavelength loop on 10 meters. Triangular loop. Now, when you do that, you end up with an antenna with a whole bunch of lobes coming off of it. And it turns out that this antenna is about the best thing for running the net. I hear everyone that comes in the net, and everyone hears me. I don't have to move the beam. Of course, now, some people don't hear me as strong as if I had the beam on. But I can copy everybody in the net all around me. And feed it with 300 ohm open wire line, 40 feet, down to a 4-to-1 bound, and about 10 feet into the station, and it's absolutely flat. No matching, no nothing. And of course, since it's a two wavelengths long, it's basically a 20 meter loop, a one wavelength 20 meter loop, and of course it works fine there with no SWR. Although I really don't need it there because I have the beam. But it works exceedingly well. So if you've got a situation where you need to put a signal in a lot of areas, like being in that control, it's a neat antenna. And I just came up with the idea of trying it because I know that loops are very, especially when you get more than one wavelength, that they're very, very full of the various different lobes, so they tend to cover the whole area. So that's just a comment, and it works well. And the other benefit of it is that it turned out that, and I picked the length of feed line, which is about 45 feet, I did not need any antenna tune or anything. Absolutely flat, right across the back. Back to that.
Wow, that's pretty cool. All right. You avoided a timeout and everything. I'm impressed. All right. So, Jim, one of the things that comes to mind is, I just wanted to mention that for people. That's roughly a 64-foot and change, maybe 65-foot loop of wire. You divide that into four, and it's about 16 and change feet on each side. That's something that you could build out of a piece of PVC as a horizontal spreader and make that wire work really, really well for you and just suspend it somewhere. I was thinking about that. Mechanically, that would be just delightful because you could mount it on a post. And as you said, you didn't even mount it very high. How high did you mount it?
25 feet. About 25 feet.
Yeah, so just think about that, guys. You can make one of these things and have a dual purpose 20 and 10 meter antenna that's about 16 feet on an edge as a big horizontal square. And it would be easy to build out of PVC. You take a large, let's say, inch and a half or 2 inch, probably inch and a half would be easier, inch and a half PVC four way, and put some, I don't know if 8s are going to be long enough, but certainly 10s would be, and spread your wire around it, feed it, and good to go. Jim, what do you think of that design?
Okay. Well, I put it up in a triangular pattern because that's the easiest way to do it. And so it ends up being 24 foot on either side. Okay. The formula, if you're putting up a one wavelength, is 1,005 divided by the frequency. But in this case, we're doubling it because we made it two wavelengths. So anyway, it's a triangular system. It's fed off the side that's attached to the tower, and then there's two other trees that it goes out to. And it's horizontal, and it's about 25 feet up, and maybe 30 feet up, and 24 foot on an edge, and works well, and ideal for running the net. No problem. No problem with the tuner or anything like that. Just talk and turn it on and talk. Back to that.
Yeah. Very good. I think you're right. You're trying to support it from external points. Getting three external points is probably easier than four with the right geometry. But there are those of us who lack three points. So I was trying to figure a way to get the damn thing in the air with one point of support, in this case in the center. But sure, that sounds great. That really sounds wonderful. Anybody have any questions for Jim or comments for Jim about that antenna design?
K2JK.
Go ahead, Don.
I know they make a halo antenna. I know they use them on 6 meters. And I wonder what kind of a directional pattern that has. Antenna like that would have, but I imagine that could be made for 10 meters as well. But I'm just wondering, would that have all the nulls in it that this thing has?
Halos are a bit more rounded, but I'm thinking that even though it's a little more lobey, if you will, by having not a half-wave design or a full-wave design, but a two-wave-like design, just as Jim's describing, you might actually garner a little gain from where you're working. What do you think, Jim?
I really don't know. Everyone seems to be about the same signal strength on it, you know. So I don't think I've got any real gain on it. But what I do have is a whole bunch of lobes that tend to cover everything, and it gets rid of the blind spots that I had, the nulls that were causing me not to copy some of the people who are trying to get into the net. So, for what I'm wanted for, it's ideal. Whether it's the best DX antenna, don't know. Haven't had enough DX on there. However, I did copy some DX on it the other day, and it was quite strong, but you don't know how it's going to do when you transmit. So, because it is low to the ground, and it's theoretically a cloud warmer. And cloud warmers are more local type antennas, you know. Back in that.
Very good. Anybody else with a comment?
SW2JEK, just think of 30 feet up is that's a wavelength up already. So it should have a fairly low angle, I would think.
Yeah, you know, Don, you're right. I said it's low, but I'm thinking of 40 and 80. But you're right. It really, according to the book, it's really not a low antenna because it's really up a wavelength, at least.
Sounds great. Sounds like a wonderful antenna. You know what? It sounds so good. I think I'm going to put it at the top of my tower. As a static antenna on the tower itself. Depending on how long the spreaders I can get together are, I can do triagonal spreaders there, but they have to be really, really long, which means they're going to be really, really droopy, but that's got potential. It's got real potential, Jim. There was another station underneath you who had a comment. Who was that?
Antoria.
Noel, go ahead.
Okay. If it was one way horizontal loop, that's a cloud warmer. But if it's two wavelengths, it has four lobes, theoretically, and they would be horizontally come out very nicely, according to what's his name? You know, the guy that designed the antennas, his theory. So it would not be a cloud warmer if it was two wavelengths long.
point. Good point, Noel. Anybody else? Jim, back to you.
Well, I've always kind of considered every horizontal antenna as a cloud warmer, but it really is up high enough so that it is not going to have the ground effect that, let's say, an 80-meter antenna would have at that position. But it certainly does have lobes on it, and I copy everybody, and it's one of the best antennas for running a net. I'm fooled with a vertical and, of course, a dipole and, of course, the beam. And, of course, the beam, of course, is the best of all, but that's a point-to-point antenna. When I turn my beam, half the people in a net go away. My beam is very sharp off the side. I can take and null down a 10 over 9 signal to almost nothing. So that's why I went ahead and did this. So this way I don't have people coming, hey, saying somebody's calling you, and, of course, I don't even hear them. But you're right, Noel, because the other night, and again, I haven't tested it because we haven't had good conditions on 10, but the other night I was copying guys down in Georgia as they were running a net while I was running the net, and I was quite surprised that I was hearing them with this antenna. And so it apparently does have some kind of a low angle, so that apparently it's getting some RF all over the place here. Back to net.
Noel?
Yeah, that's why I keep joking that I want a 320-meter loop antenna, because that way it would be a perfectly good loop for use on 160.
Very good. I like that idea. It'd be wonderful. I still want a two-wave loop on 160. That would be awesome. Of course, I also wanted, 200 feet in the air, but I'm sorry. I wanted 199 feet in the air because I don't want to deal with the FAA. It's enough fun dealing with the FCC. Anybody else?
K2EIR.
Be two wavelengths on 160?
Sure, why not? Why not? And I think it'd be good, Noel. Howie had a question.
I'm not a question, but I literally answered you before when you said who else has comments, but I saw that W2CCN has a question, and Noel had a question, so that was left unattended to.
Oh, yeah, that I know. I'm sorry about on this topic.
Nothing further here, K2EIR.
Okay, very good. Jim, any more from you?
We'll continue to comment on it as we use it and see how it works, and let you know. Back to that.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking one of those with me at some point. That sounds like fun. All right. Very good. Thank you for that. Mr. Noel, it's all yours, KTBR.
Okay, I got two comments and two questions. So the first comment, Steve, WI2W, is using that 9-to-1 bounce from the Hawaii Radio Club. He did it at Portable Day, and he made one of his own, and it's in Mr. Joyce Copper with him from Virginia. That's the first comment. So it seems to work pretty good. You just throw up a wire straight up 53 feet long, put the 9-to-1 at the bottom, run your coax off of it at least 25 feet, throw a few torites or some other RF blocking device at that point and feed it into your rig, and away you go. Quick and easy, especially if you're in a campground where you have limited space to either side, but you can go up. That's the first comment. Second comment. I've been trying out that Grumpy DC to DC inverter, because I have a bunch of CFET acid batteries that have lots of oomph left, but they have higher than normal internal resistance, maybe an eighth of an ohm. When I put them on a scooter, and normally if I have a resting voltage of 25.6 volts, which is 12.8 fully charged batteries in series, and I give the thing full throttle on a level ground with my large body in it, to drop maybe 2 volts with good batteries. When I have these older batteries, it'll drop 6, 7, maybe even 8 volts. So this is telling me, when you start figuring that I'm doing about 20 amps, some rough back of the envelope calculations, 1/8 of an ohm, 1/6 of an ohm internal resistance. Of course, I squared R will kill you, but if you put 4 of these batteries in parallel, feed them into one of these grumpy devices, and then, of course, the batteries are of uncertain heritage. So what Tony and I are building, we got 9 of those DC to DC inverters at $8 a piece from ePay. I got some Schottky 20-amp diodes so we can isolate the inputs from each other. They have, I believe, about 0.28 to 0.3 volts voltage drop. I don't mind. We're going to put them in parallel coming out. So we're going to... Mr. Jim Jackson had done a study of the circuitry looking at the device, and he thinks that there's a diode on the output, but we're going to put a Schottky just to make sure and parallel 3 of these things so that the next power failure we have with Sandy, I can take whatever scooter batteries I have of whatever vintage. Some of them may be much more juice, much more voltage. One might be 12.8 volts. The next one might be 12 volts. The one next one might be 11.7. I don't care as long as I got those isolating diodes. I can throw them all on, operate, and when my good batteries get down to this point where the other battery is there, they'll all put a little juice in, so I can suck all the batteries down. So that's what my second comment, that Tony and I are doing that. We're putting them into plastic boxes approximately 8 inches by 3 inches by 2 inches. Each of the diodes has their own heat sink, so I don't have to worry about them shorting out each other here in the TO220 cases. And we're going to try putting, as I said, 3 of those grumpy devices in parallel.
Repeater. Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
Check.
Thank you, Noel. Does anybody have comments for him? Gordon had to step down the hall for a second. Gary, take it over for the time being. K2BAR. Anybody have comments on Noel's?
Noel, this is W2LCN. I've got a question for you.
Hey, Rick.
Can you tell me the name of that that little thing you were building up? You said something in the beginning, and it sounded like it was almost a kit, because I have a number of those batteries as well, and I was trying to figure out how I could do something other than connecting the positives together and the negatives together and letting it go wherever it goes. But could you repeat that name of the part or the item you were talking about? It sounds pretty interesting. I'd like to look it up.
Okay. Actually, what I could do is send you the link, because I got the acknowledgement when they sent it to me. My call is n2oel@arrl.net, so just send me an email, and I will reply with the link. It's a DC to DC inverter. Gordon, Jim Jackson, and myself, we got together, made a group purchase of an item from Grumpy Shop, and it was one of these devices inside of it with the bottom epoxy glued so we couldn't see the circuitry too well. But the device is advertised that it'll run a normal HF transceiver. It will not. My TS50 resets itself every time I try to transmit because it draws 12 amps. The thing is marginal at that. However, it will run a VHF transceiver very nicely on 25 watts. So send me an email. Just mark on your email DC to DC inverter. I'll send you the link. It's $8 delivered to you approximately, I believe it is. It's about $8 from China. Takes a few days.
Yeah, let me just say this about the XJK, about the Grumpy versus the XJK.
Got any feedback you can give me? Because it sounds like it's a worthwhile thing to take a look, and for $8, it's definitely worth it. So I'll send it back to that. This is W2LCN. Thank you.
Yeah, Rick and company, let me just make a comment. I have one of those, and as you indicate, Noel, they'll work for a up to about a 20-watt radio. And a 10-watt radio for long key-down periods. That's about it. I had hopes that I could use it to keep my, you know, my ICOM 7000 happy. And I've played with it on various bands, various modes, and I got to tell you, it is a piece of garbage. Let me just say that straight out. I mean, if you have a radio that's temperamental, it's going to run, you know, about 20, 25 watts, you keep your transmissions reasonably short, that's fine. But if you need a boost regulator, don't buy the MSK, don't buy the Grumpy, don't go through all sorts of harebrained ideas, see how many Grumpies you can tie together, because all you get is a bundle of Grumpies, in my opinion. And for all the money you spend, why don't you just go out and buy an XJK and be a real happy guy? You get one of those boost regulators, and they have them, both the 100-watt model and the 200-watt model, and I cannot say enough positive about those bad boys. They are pricey, and they work as advertised. So, end of rant. Noel, it's up to you.
We're having fun, and they're $8 a piece.
Yeah, but I need them to work. And you know, one of the things, when you start making them really, really complicated, there reaches a point where you just need to have your hair fall out. And if you've seen me in the last 10 years, you'll note that there has been a steady reduction of that. So I don't really, I mean, I would like to have more gray hair, but the alternative seems to be having no hair.
Well, hey, for his problem, he could easily rig a few of those 20-amp Schottky diodes to feed one set of Anderson power poles and feed it into any boost regulator, including the MFJ or the one that you mentioned.
Well, let me just rant on the MFJ since I'm on a roll here trashing people or trashing devices. You know, you're putting Schottky diodes, you're doing this, you're doing that. I mean, the Schottky diodes are a good idea for when you're balancing out batteries. I mean, that part I get. But at the same time, you really have to think it through as to how much system complexity and how much can go wrong by adding all these moving parts. You know, it's sometimes simplicity is a good thing. So, you know, I applaud your trying to get a little bit more out of your batteries. Let me just say this. I had that little 7 ampere hour 12 volt seal lead acid as an example, and I hit it with 100 watt soldering iron, maybe 150 watt soldering iron, to tag in some pigtails to which I had connected Anderson power poles. In the process of doing that, much to my happiness and amazement, all of a sudden, the internal resistance of the battery diminished because I had to solder it not once but twice. I had to get the connections really, really hot, and I had made a mistake in the way they were oriented. So in the process of soldering to the contacts not once but twice and desoldering once in the middle, I managed to revive the battery. So there's a little lesson, too. So maybe a 250-watt soldering iron, you know, attached to the post for a couple of minutes so that you can put some solder on it and pull it off and put it back on, whatever. Maybe there's some magic in them that are lessons. Maybe a little heat on the post might be good. Just don't use a grounded soldering iron while the battery's connected to anything, okay? Hey Rick, I have one that's scary for you. How about a torch on the binding post of a battery? If you don't cause it to explode, at least you might revive the battery.
Not sure how that would be set up, but it sounds interesting. I don't know. Oh, wait, you got to put together something like that, and we'll send out a video tutorial or something.
I that was tongue-in-cheek. I'm not so sure I'd want to bring flame, but I can bring heat to a binding post of a battery. And if maybe there's internal resistance issues, maybe through the application of heat to each of the binding posts, you can clear some of the nonsense that goes on inside the battery that's lowering the or raising the internal resistance. I think that's kind of my message.
It sounds good to me. I was just trying to, I heard Noel's comment, and it sounded like I could use that to put together this array of batteries in some more safe fashion than connecting a bunch of strands of wire together and then twisting one big braid of wire together. Seems like it might work a little better, but I don't know. I have to live and learn. I'll watch and see what you guys come up with, and then I'll look at the ideas and take it from there.
I think Noel's idea of separating the batteries with diodes is a prudent idea. Don't get me wrong. I just think that cascading multiple boost regulators together is not such a good idea. No matter whether they cost $8, $80, or $180, it just sounds to me like you're looking for trouble. You know, if your load can deal with one boost regulator of whatever vintage you decide, good. I'm all for it. Whether it's $8 or $80 or whatever. But, man, you know, if you need higher current, you know, don't start paralleling boost regulators. That's just my own opinion. Noel, it's your turn. I'll shut up. N2OEL, K2BAR.
Okay, for the question, the toroids, believe it or not, they were delivered to Tony's house this morning after last week's net. I got them, and we've been talking so much. They're called Micrometals T300/2 Iron Power Toroid 3 Core. And I got six of them. And so my question is, when you wind these, I've taken apart a couple of commercial ones, and they're wound with regular house wire. Just plain old ordinary wire that you buy at Home Depot, 600 volts, I believe solid wire, 14 gauge. So the question is, I know Ms. Joyce believes in using Teflon coated and all this. If you were using it, you know, 300-400 watts, would you really need to go to Teflon coating? And the other thing I'd like to bring up is I got those. I'm talking too much here. I got the book from Jerry Cevic, W2FMI, called Understanding Building and Using Bounds and whatever that they are. Anyway, CQ Magazine had a sale this weekend. So that's the question about wire.
Okay, the good news is you didn't time out to repeat it. The bad news is I lost sight of what your question was. So, in 30 seconds, what is your question?
If I want to run 400 watts through a mound, do I have to use Teflon-coated wire, or can I use plain 14-gauge house wire from Home Depot or Lowe's?
Comment.
Yeah, I know the answer, but go ahead, Jim.
Okay, this is K2ZO. Of course, it depends on what you're doing with the ballast. For example, let's say you have an 80-meter antenna, and you are feeding it with a ballon, and it's a one-to-one ballon. The impedance of the antenna is 50, 75 ohms, and the coax is 50 ohms, and everything's happy. The wire for the power level you're talking about really doesn't need to have that high a dielectric. Let's say you do something stupid and decide to use your tuner and put a kilowatt into that on 40 meters. The impedance of that antenna is no longer 50 ohms. It's on the order of 1,000 ohms. Now the voltage goes up dramatically, okay? So now you can have easily with a kilowatt have 3,000 volts across that. now you'll see some breakdown with some of the wire, okay? So that's